Mini episode 1889 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode 1889 of the FDH Lounge. You have with you here today FDH Lounge managing partner Rick Morris, with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries. I'm speaking, of course, of the great sports writer Fran Stuckberry from Our Sports Central. And when we have him on the show, it's almost always to talk football. We've talked some other sports that he has covered, some other minor league sports with Our Sports Central. But most of the time, it's football, and indeed it is today. As you might have guessed based on the time of year, it is our annual College Football Bowl and Playoff Preview Show, taking a look ahead to all of the great football, college football smorgasbord that we're going to have for the next month plus, and take a look at some headlines in college football while we're at it. Fran, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being here today, my man.
Absolute pleasure to be here, Rick. I love talking college football with you, especially bowl season.
That's right. That's right. It is that time of year again. And there are some things where, again, this is going to be a little bit of a preview here for what we're going to do after the bowls. I think we did this last year, too, looking at the college coaching carousel. We will get to that at that time in January, in mid to later January. But you have to do a little bit of a preview of that based on the events that have been happening. I thought that Lane Kiffin and everything that was happening there would be the biggest, baddest thing to talk about right at the outset, but we've been preempted that in the last 24 hours as we're recording this, the situation at Michigan, Sharon Moore has been fired. They're saying for cause, and this whole thing of an alleged affair that is apparently, if you believe everything, pretty well documented over a period of time, and then his subsequent arrest by the police, as far as, alleged menacing of this woman. And this is something where, again, this was really an open secret. I mean, I'd heard about stuff just here and there over the last couple of months. And I have to say, and I'm going to preview this by saying, some might call this a little bit of a hot take, but I mean, I take and yes, I am the son of an Ohio State season ticket holder. And yeah, I grew up going to games there, but the dim view that I take of the Michigan program morally, I think, is justified. I mean, this whole thing about the Michigan man and the upstanding nature of that, just do a Google search on Gary Moeller restaurant wife, okay? He got fired in 1994 for what was allegedly just a drunken outburst at a restaurant, but there was a little bit of danger attached to his wife at the time, too. So, I mean, this has been happening, and you look at Juwan Howard getting blown out as the basketball coach. Obviously, everything with the spying scandal with Michigan. They play fast and loose here all the way around. And, again, I know I'm cynical, but I think Sharon Moore, that this woman – rather than being the one that got him fired, they would have been shoving an NDA in her face if he beat Ohio State. Let's be honest, especially if that put them into the college football playoff. That's my perspective on it. And I want to see the timeline of everything that happened yesterday, because did Michigan do anything? Now we're hearing that apparently Sharon Moore's wife was menaced after this. He had an altercation with her before the altercation that got him arrested. So did Michigan do anything to try to head off the danger to these women? There's stories out there now that Moore had been stalking his alleged paramour for months now. So if they thought they had enough to get him on and they thought this guy was a nut job, did they do anything at all to try to protect the women, or did they just shove him out on the street afterwards and say, whatever happens, happens? I'm going to want to see the timeline of what happened here and if innocent women were potentially put in the crossfire unnecessarily. But this thing has just been ugly all the way around, friend. We don't see anything this ugly, generally speaking, in college football, not to these depths.
Rick, what an ugly, Rick, what an ugly disgrace. And really, it's really bad. I mean, it's funny. Everyone, every time you think when college coaching circle is going to slow down and everyone's going to focus on the bowl games, this happens. It's just, the thing is, last year they would have been screwed with that transfer portal starting in, around this time, like 2 weeks. But now transfer portal isn't until January, so they can retain all their players and target ones they want to keep. There is no rush to, just find a band-aid on an open wound. They can take their time and get a guy they want. They will pay a guy a lot of money, so they can just kind of wait a little bit and not have to rush to the altar.
Yeah, it just comes down to, at this point, who are the ones that weren't necessarily locked down extra special over the course of the last month or so. There's been particular rumors about Jed Fish coming over from Washington, who I think would be a much better coach than they deserve at this point in time. You got that situation there. And again, I mean, everything in life is a matter of perspective, because we thought that the Lane Kiffin jumping from Mississippi to LSU, the way that it happened, we thought that nothing could be as ugly as that. But there was no police involved. There were no women that were menaced, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This was just a simple thing of jolting one fan base in a particularly gross way and trying to maintain control over the program. I want to coach as long as the team is still alive, which is, freaking hilarious. The ball's on this guy. Again, we thought that was as ugly as it got until the Michigan thing blew up, but it was pretty ugly also. I mean, let's not say that just because it doesn't rise to the level of somebody getting arrested and families getting, torn asunder, as was the case at Michigan, that doesn't mean that it was zero what ended up happening here. The jumping and the way that it happened and the way that it all played out, and Mississippi really kind of standing firm on this and promoting their defensive coordinator to be head coach, which was interesting because a lot of people seemed to think that it was going to go to Joe Judge. It didn't. Now you got some folks from LSU coming back to coach during the college football playoff on the offensive side of the ball. So it's just a really, really, really weird situation. And Lane Kiffin, again, setting himself up to be public enemy number one heading into the 2026 college football season.
Well, obviously, Rick, with it dragging out this long, I mean, come on, the writing was on the wall. Because if he was going to stay at Ole Miss, he would have taken the extension, got a statue, and it would have been all taken care of. But the fact that it dragged on this long, come on, he had his foot out the door. And the thing is, now Lane Kiffin goes to LSU, and scrutiny is going to be insane with him. He's going to have to win a championship within the first two or three seasons. Otherwise, I mean, the pressure and the politicians and the governor, that's going to be an interesting thing that goes on. He'll win LSU, but I don't know how quickly it's going to happen. I mean, next season, LSU at Ole Miss is going to be one hell of a game. I hope College Game Day is there.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the games of the year. And I have to say, and I've seen some reporting that as part of the deal here that LSU might have a record amount of NIL money available from boosters next year. Like we're talking like $60 million or some of the figures that I've heard. Having said that, I don't quite understand how this fits into the whole post-settlement deal in college football. Supposedly, everybody was going to be capped at $20 million. The only NIL deals that were going to be happening from here on in were going to be ostensibly policed by, like a Big Six accounting firm. Is this an actual legitimate endorsement deal, or is this funneling money? Which, again, and I know and everybody knows that they're going to find ways around that, but not as blatant as, we have a $60 million fund of extra money. So I don't quite know how that's going to play in. But he does have, he is right about that. I mean, he's going to have advantages and everything like that at LSU that he would have hardly anywhere else in the country. And it is one of these things where, again, it's high risk, high reward, because he's got all of that going for him. That's the reward. Winning at LSU is for the people that say, oh, it's bigger to win a national championship in Mississippi because, you're the one that built it. I don't know about that. When you do it at LSU, that's just a bigger platform. Not that I'm a fan of their program by any stretch of the imagination, but it's true. But it's one of those things, high risk, high reward, like you said. If it doesn't go well, his foot's going to be on the banana peel and everybody's going to be wondering what they paid for.
Well, one thing I will say, Rick, the fan base in LSU is passionate. They love their team. They, I mean, and Ole Miss, I mean, they're a little, foot out the door. Halftime, they go out, they have a couple of drinks.
Yeah.
And some of them just stay out and stay and drink. But in all seriousness, I mean, LSU, I mean, they just spent $50 some odd million on Kelly's buyout, Ryan Kelly's buyout. So they're throwing money all over the place. And the thing is with LSU, I mean, I like Glenn Kiffin more when he was at Ole Miss. LSU, I'm not really going to be cheering him on.
Well, as a Tennessee fan, I haven't been cheering him on since he left Knoxville. So to me, this is just another I told you so about what kind of a guy he is. But that will be very interesting to see how it plays out. And another big headline in college football recently here actually starts to bring us into our college football playoff talk, because it has been the backlash that has come out of South Bend to the way that everything played out with the playoff here. And I'm just going to read everybody. This is a preview of this week. We do our college and pro football tip sheet on fantasydrafthelp.com. Every week I post my rankings for the week for the college football playoff. Here's how I had it, a little different in some ways, vastly different as you get to the bottom. These were my rankings coming out of last weekend. Number one, Indiana. Number two, Georgia. Number three, Ohio State. Four, Texas Tech. Those are your byes. I have the same four teams getting the byes that the committee did. From there, number five, Oregon. Six, Texas A&M. Seven, Mississippi. Eight, Oklahoma. Nine, Notre Dame. 10, Alabama, 11, James Madison, 12, Tulane. My next four in were Vanderbilt, Miami, BYU, and Texas. That's right. I didn't even have Miami as the next team in there. And that's the thing where, again, and I know everybody's piling on Notre Dame right now, and this is a thing where, again, full disclosure, my brother and my sister-in-law went to Notre Dame. That's actually where they met. Having said that, I got to say, like, I haven't always been super popular in the family for my football takes. I'm somebody that, as a Catholic, has kind of found the whole touchdown Jesus thing to be a little sacrilegious. So I'm not saying what I'm saying out of any particular fondness for Notre Dame, but you can't have them over Miami the whole year in the rankings if you're the committee and then say at the end head-to-head matters. I think on the eye test by the end of the year, Notre Dame was a better and, more importantly, more consistent team than Miami was. That said, Miami should have had a legitimate pathway into the playoff. If the ACC wasn't incompetent and didn't hand wave in a five-loss Duke team to be their conference champion, you would have had Miami playing for the ACC championship. You should have had some kind of quality control in place that would have tried to put the best two teams in a very, very mediocre conference in there. Miami could have earned their way into the playoff, but the ACC screwed them. And then in the end, again, Notre Dame feels like they got screwed by the ACC, the advocacy that they had for Miami that Notre Dame felt like was at their expense. All I can say is, again, as somebody who has had over the years a well-known kind of petty streak myself, I kind of get it. I don't want to be a hypocrite for piling on Notre Dame because I can be a little petty myself. They don't really need the money. The ACC needs the money. ESPN wanted the money. And they want to stick it to the ACC, and they want to stick it to ESPN, who they both see as being partially responsible for what happened to them here. So the rest of the world's going to call this a hot take, but I have no problem with Notre Dame reacting the way that they did in this. I think it's a bluff, this whole thing. Like, oh, nobody's going to play them after they have this guarantee that if they're in the top 12 from here on in, they make the playoff. I don't believe that. You make money when you play Notre Dame. That's the whole thing. Notre Dame looks at the ACC as leeching off of them because of the way that their tickets sell in those games versus everything else. I don't know if I quite agree with Notre Dame on that scale. If they think that, and if Notre Dame does think that, then they should look for a better business deal elsewhere. It would be a bad thing for the ACC if they did, because having them as an affiliated, you know, non-member, if you want to call it that, has been a big benefit to the ACC. But I thought it was really, really, really hinky what the committee did there of just like, we're going to default head-to-head. Number one, when we haven't done it all year, and number two, when there's no semblance of eye test. Miami playing some of these games down the stretch, you think they're better and more consistent than Notre Dame? I certainly don't. I think the committee got it wrong. And I realize, Fran, I'm in the minority on this one. The rest of the world is kind of just celebrating it happening to Notre Dame.
Rick, as far as Notre Dame is concerned, all season long in that college football playoff show on Tuesday, they had the lead. And out of nowhere, the last week, it all changed. Rick, I'll be honest with you, Rick. I wasn't really surprised it happened, especially after the ACC Duke winning. I mean, I had this feeling inside me, Rick, that Miami was going to be put in because of that. Because they wanted to make sure the Power Five teams represented the playoffs properly.
Yeah, that probably did have a lot to do with it. Basically, rewarding the ACC for their incompetence by having a system that aced Miami out of where they should have been, the ACC championship game. They should have been playing for it and have a chance to win it on the field. But this is a situation where what it ended up being in terms of the actual rankings here, I already gave you mine, but the ones that it actually is, 1 Indiana, 2 Ohio State, 3 Georgia, 4 Texas Tech. So the same four teams getting byes. 5 Oregon in the first round. They're going to host number 12, James Madison. The 8-9 at Oklahoma is going to be Alabama at Oklahoma. The 6-11 is going to be Tulane at Ole Miss in a rematch of a game where Ole Miss really waxed them earlier this year. Tulane now coming in with a lame duck coach. And number 7 versus number 10, Miami at Texas A&M. Probably the best chance for a lower seed to win, particularly if you take into account that Ty Simpson, it's being rumored, is playing through a back issue right now at Alabama. That's all conjecture at this point. But I'm not necessarily seeing anybody here that can really, really, really challenge any of the big four teams. You could maybe make a good case, I think, for Oregon. And in a game against Texas Tech, that would be in the Orange Bowl. Possibly you could make a case for Texas A&M in a quasi-home game against Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Eve. Then again, Ohio State had to play Texas in the Cotton Bowl last year, and the so-called quasi-home field didn't really matter there. So are you seeing anybody that's going to be playing in the first weekend that might be a threat to come in and take out the top four seeds? Because a year ago, the top four seeds fell in very shocking fashion. I get not the 3 and the 4 so much, because that's when it was still the whole participation trophy thing of like, oh, if you're a conference champion, you're guaranteed a top four spot. This year, that's not the case. But this year, I think the shoe is on the other foot, where I think everything really, really, really favors the chalk in a couple of these rounds to a degree that is much, much, much different than last year. But that's how I see it.
I think the only one that's a real threat is Oregon over Texas Tech, simply because Texas Tech hasn't been to this spotlight, you know, before, and they mm-hmm. may not know how to handle it. Oregon's went there last year, been there this year. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But as far as Notre Dame's concerned, I mean, Rick, I think they should have played in the bowl game. That would have been fun to see them against BYU in that Pop-Tarts Bowl. It's a shame those seniors, some people, are never going to be able to play the last ever collegiate game, because now those guys are going to the pros, Rick. So I'm a little disappointed with that. Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Well, yeah, somebody who's
Rick, we won't share some of the memes we saw. I share with you off the air. It made us chuckle.
Yes, yes. And again, as somebody who I admit to sharing a lot of Cartman's quality, so I kind of get where Notre Dame's coming from on this one here. But in looking at this, I think as we go through this here, what was a very, very thrilling Big Ten championship game, I think that there is an excellent chance that it will be a rematch in the national championship game. Georgia has just been, for a team that's got only one loss, they have been kind of up and down during the season here. And if I thought that we were going to be seeing Georgia necessarily at their best in what could be the national semifinals in the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State, I might pull the trigger on Georgia. But I've really been sort of, you know, questioning, as a lot of folks have, just the kind of week in and week out with Georgia that they've had here. Ohio State, especially defensively, looked pretty impregnable until the Big Ten championship game. Even then, only giving up 13 points to Indiana. But Fernando Mendoza, who has been my pick for the Heisman all year, he was able to get the first downs when he needed them. He was able to move the ball more effectively than Ohio State with Julian Sand. And again, I have a feeling it could go the other way. My sense right now is probably Ohio State in the rematch against Indiana in the national championship game, Ohio State to defend their national championship. Because again, the second crack that they had at Oregon a year ago was different. I think it may play out the same way here. But all I know is that, again, if we get the national semifinals of Indiana versus Texas Tech or Oregon, because that was a great game when they played, Georgia versus Ohio State, I think we're guaranteed three great games, the national semifinals and the championship game, Fran. I just really think that that's how it would play out. I think these teams here, and I think the teams from the power conferences may be in for a bit of a shock when they experience this Texas Tech defense. One of the best defenses money can buy at this level anyways.
Well, Rick, it goes to show that when NIL happened with those in a room college football, it created more parity. All of a sudden, you see Indiana out of nowhere. But that's part of it, that's Kirk Cincinnati. Let's give him credit with that. Texas Tech, it's like, they spend the money. The thing is, with this transfer portal, Rick, as you learned from our North Carolina Tar Heels, you can't microwave a football team. You have to spend money correctly.
Yes, and certainly North Carolina threw a lot of money at it and didn't get the outcome that they were looking for here. As far as the rest of the bowl games, it is a situation where, as you said before, it could have been Notre Dame playing against BYU in the old Pop-Tarts Bowl here, but instead, and this is the irony of it, that with Georgia Tech being my nephew's school, they end up being the one to slide into that spot. His parents, with the alma mater of Notre Dame, not going to that game against BYU, but it will be Georgia Tech in that game. That is going to be fascinating to watch. There's a number of bowl games here. Certainly, Michigan-Texas, that was going to be one in what used to be the Citrus Bowl. That was going to be one where even before we saw these things happen, right, even before all the complete meltdown at Michigan in recent days, that was going to be a very, very interesting game, all the more so certainly at this point. And some of the other key ones here. So you and I have talked about, I still see it listed as the Citrus Bowl on Wikipedia, actually. I'd seen it also referred to as, I think, the Cheez-Its Bowl. So don't know what the true story is there, nor do I necessarily care all that much. The ReliaQuest Bowl, Iowa, Vanderbilt, that's generally a pretty good bowl game in Tampa every year because it matches two of the top non-playoff teams from the Big Ten and the SEC, as is the case here. Similarly, the Music City Bowl, Illinois and Tennessee, that's going to be an excellent one, December 30th, the Music City Bowl in Nashville. And what, Rick, are some of the other ones you're looking at?
And Rick, a game we got to keep an eye out on is the Pinstripe Bowl.
Penn State, yes.
That should have been the national championship.
Yeah, the letdown bowl. Yeah, two teams that myself and everybody else had in the playoff at the beginning of the year will be battling on a cold, rainy morning in Yankee Stadium. So, yeah, have fun with that one, folks, in your consolation bowl.
And, I mean, Rick, look at some of these bowl games. The Frisco Bowl, UNLV, yes. Ohio. That's going to be a fun game to watch.
My Bobcats with an interim coach situation, which nobody's been able to get to the bottom of there. So, thoughts and prayers to Coach Smith. We don't know why he's on leave right now or what the situation is. It's got to be better than what's going on at Michigan.
Christmas Eve, we actually have a good game. California, Hawaii. That's going to be Hawaii's first bowl game in a long time. Timmy Chang has turned it around. That's going to be a fun game to watch Christmas Eve instead of, being bored with your family.
Atmosphere-wise, yes. I just like that's one of the games out there that, like, the atmosphere helps kind of set it apart. You're right that it'll be a very competitive battle on the field also. Another one of the ones, and again, I'm an old school guy, all right? So when you talk about the atmosphere of it, every New Year's Eve, there being the Sun Bowl, 2:00 Eastern time on CBS in El Paso, Arizona State, and Duke. And generally speaking, by the time they're done playing that game, you're seeing the sun set for the final time in a calendar year. So that's a thing where the atmospherics in El Paso are pretty special. The bowl game itself should be pretty good. And about what Duke deserves, frankly, for being the ACC champion with 5 losses. I don't think they deserve any better than being in the Sun Bowl. Sun Bowl, that's for doggone sure. Historically, the Holiday Bowl has always been, and this goes back to the 80s, this has been one where it's always had some intriguing matchups and a lot of times shootouts, but very competitive games, regardless of the style of play. This one should be no different. Number 17, Arizona against SMU.
Well, another game I kind of like, Rick, is the game above Bowling in Phoenix, New Mexico against Minnesota. For whatever reason, Minnesota plays in bowl games like they're in a national championship, whatever reason.
Yeah.
Another game is kind of close to my heart is the Alamo Bowl, because I was down there in the national championship in 2023 getting showered in confetti, inches away from the Rock. So it's kind of like I was on that field where I had my Hollywood moment. So and the Alamo Bowl is always a fun game to watch.
That is a fun game, certainly. And, so there's a number of them throughout the course of the SEC. And, yeah, USC and TCU are definitely going to be capable of putting on a good one there.
And even the Mayo Bowl will be fun with Wake Forest and Mississippi State. Mississippi State, with all those bowl saying no, they will be able to get in. And the thing is, with Mississippi State, they bring the cowbells. So
that's right.
Fun with that. But, I mean, Rick, I don't have a problem with these bowl games. People say there's too many bowl games. I mean, one thing I did mention to you earlier, this is going to be the last L.A. Bowl. That'll be on this Saturday, Boise and Washington. I think I have no problem with bowl games, Rick. It's fun to watch. It's one thing people actually sit there and watch and enjoy and not disagree over. Everything else people disagree on, football, politics. But you can watch bowl games and not have anger spat.
Yes, I totally agree with that. You've got the Gator Bowl with Missouri and number 19, Virginia. That should be interesting. The Texas Bowl, number 21, Houston, with them playing LSU. So it's really, really, really a rehearsal for these players, the ones that are coming back for Lane Kiffin and company. First chance to make an impression on the new staff. And that's why, again, the programs – that we're sitting out the season here. I think Kansas State, Iowa State, that's where I think it's self-defeating, because historically it's been a situation where, again, even if it's an interim coach that's in there, like I said, my Ohio Bobcats are playing with an interim coach. Who knows? He may be the head coach next year, but it's a chance for you to make your first impression on the new coaching staff here. So that's how teams have traditionally looked at it, as opposed to, OMG, we're in too much disarray, we can't play the game. That to me is weak sauce.
And like with that Pinstripe Bowl, I mean, the Penn State loves their interim coach who's going to be staying on with the team. I mean, that's going to motivate them to win that game. The thing is with bowl games, Rick, you have to go with motivation, because you don't know who's playing, who's not. Another fun game is going to be that Wasabi Fenway Bowl, Army and UConn. That's going to be a fun game to watch. And then you have another, the military team, whenever they play in these bowl games, Rick, they're fun to watch. Navy Cincinnati will be another fun game. Vanderbilt, Iowa, that's going to be, Diego's probably his last game, the Van Wilder of college football. Is he a pro? I don't think so. He should probably go to CFL. So I mean, and the thing is, Rick, we'll watch these games and like even like the Cure Bowl, you have the Western Michigan against Kansas State, both conference champions. So I mean, that game was, it's one of those things where I mean they're fun to watch and the game and they can be games that come out of nowhere and be entertaining. You never know what's going to happen, who's going to show up. And some of these kids, Rick, that are getting a chance to play, they want to play well. You want to know why? Because if they play well, another team's going to offer them money.
That's right. So it's a chance to make an impression all the way around. And, when we get to the end of the College Bowl season here, we will go through. We will do a review of it, and we'll circle back and take a look at the coaching carousel as well. But as always, Fran Stuckberry, a pleasure to break it down with you. I love checking out your stuff at our Sports Central and urge everybody to do so. So thank you so much for being here for this breakdown with us. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, Rick. We'll do a deep dive on the bowl games and the playoffs after the holidays and some of the coaching maneuvers.
We'll do that. Thank you so much, Fran. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1889.